Hi, I'm Keith.
Hi, this is Ragini.
And welcome to More Than Masala, a podcast where a chef and a culinary researcher talk about spices from the Indian subcontinent, from how to use them to sometimes the dark history behind their origins. Every episode, Ragini and I do a deep dive into one spice and talk about the history as well as how to use the spice. Welcome back, everyone. This is episode 8, Nutmeg. Ragini, it's so good to be back with you. I'm excited for the holidays. How are you? Are you feeling festive? Because I heard a rumor that your house is nice and decorated.
It sure is. In a sense, I can't believe we're kind of at the end of the year already. And episode 8 means 8 months, which means we've done this episode or this podcast for, you know, more than half a year, which is pretty cool. And we didn't celebrate the 6 month mark, but, you know, the holidays is a great time for us to celebrate the 8 month mark. So cheers to us.
Yeah, I think that you're doing a great job. I think everyone realizes that I got a lot of work to do, you know.
No, it's such a fun podcast, and thank you guys all for like all of the kind words that you've shared, you know, and it's a whole team effort behind the scenes.
So if you can make our Christmas a best gift to us, Ragini, wouldn't that be like a 5-star rating and some shares with your friends?
100%. Best bit. Costs you nothing.
So today we're talking about nutmeg, and I'm really excited to continue to dive into all these cool spices. Ragini, why don't you start off with a little bit of the history, and let's dive right in.
Cool. So nutmeg. We chose nutmeg for this month specifically because it's a spice that features super heavily in the holiday foods in, typically around like Christmas time. If you think of I'm using air quotes that nobody can see, but if you think of like traditional Christmas spices from the Western world, they often include, you know, nutmeg, clove, cinnamon, and that combination. And nutmeg always features really, really heavily. And so one of the things that I started asking was like, well, why is that the case? Like, why did those come to be associated with Christmas? You know, what is it about soaking fruit in some sort of alcohol with a combination of these spices that came to signify the holidays, and sort of how did this all come to be? And as we always do, we'll sort of bring this back to the subcontinent and talk about how it operates there. But, you know, one of the things we say pretty much every episode is that spices are the quiet heroes of history. And if all spices are the quiet heroes, nutmeg is Hercules. Nutmeg is like the spice that that I think probably has one of the most violent histories. So, you know, things like sugar and cotton have quite violent histories of how they came to be with their plantations, so on and so forth. Whereas spices, for the most part, haven't been quite as violent, with the exception of nutmeg. So we start hearing about nutmeg way back when, all the way from sort of the first century, and we see evidence that nutmeg was carried to Byzantium, which was at the time a Greek colony, and it would later become Constantinople. But, you know, and it went as far as Rome, and it was, unsurprisingly, any guesses, Keith, on who it was that was taking nutmeg around the world?
See, that's a sinister laugh.
It's
right
someone
there.
We've talked about. It's the people who ruled the world for spices before other people.
Before other people. I'm going to go with the Portuguese.
Okay. So this even predates the Portuguese. It's the Arab traders who ruled kind of the whole spice trade before the Europeans were desperate enough to come back in later on and find their own way in. But so it was definitely originally Arab traders who sort of took nutmeg around the world. And this is Arab traders that predate Islam, but from the same sort of from the region that we now consider to be the Arab world. And so nutmeg was sort of discovered when in Indonesia, in a group of islands called the Banda Islands. And it's a very small part of the world, but they've had a disproportionately large impact on the world. And it was always incredibly, incredibly expensive. Like from the day that it was harvested, it was always very expensive. And it was expensive because it was the only known place in the trade world that nutmeg grew. And so there was no other source for it at that time. And when the Arabs controlled the spice trade, they were incredibly secretive about their source always. And whether it was cinnamon or cumin or pepper, they were always very secretive and really took that role of the middleman very, very seriously, not really allowing the end consumer and the suppliers to talk at any time so that no one could steal their trade secrets. There's a really interesting story that we'll talk about with this when it comes to cinnamon, which is in hindsight quite a funny one. And sometimes today we can't believe that something that silly actually worked, but it did. But I'll save that for cinnamon. So nutmeg, super expensive. You know, people in Europe start to become more and more accustomed to nutmeg, and they want more of it. And so then, you know, as we know, Columbus, you know, set sail in 1497, looking essentially for spices. And then he ends up on the Malabar coast of India, where he proclaims for Christ and spices. And he thought he was he ends up in the New World while looking for the Malabar coast of India, thinking that's where he had landed. One of the things that he didn't find, however, is nutmeg. And so the search for that continued. So now we're in sort of the late 1400s. And then eventually it was the Portuguese in 1511 who annexed the islands in Indonesia, of which Banda is a small part. So the nutmeg growing region of Indonesia that was annexed was actually a very, very small part of the total land that was taken. And so they established themselves there, and they sort of sealed a deal on a monopoly on nutmeg that would last about a century. And then a century later, one of the two East India companies, the Dutch East India Company, seized pretty much all but one of those islands. And so the only one they didn't seize was the island of Run, which will become important in a moment. But so they seized all but one of those islands and immediately enslaved all of the native population. Now, this is where the history starts to become really dark. So on one hand, you have a population in Europe that is becoming more and more accustomed to nutmeg. Nutmeg is being sold as sort of this wonder spice. You know, we'll get into the health benefits in a bit, but it's being sold as this absolute wonder spice, and everybody wants it, and it's becoming part of celebrations. You're adding it to desserts. You're adding it to all kinds of things, and the demand for nutmeg is high. And not only that, but nutmeg is said to be this incredible aphrodisiac, so it has a very high popularity for that reason alone. And so the Dutch realized that they were onto something good, and it was something that they had to hold close to them in the same way the Arabs had centuries ago and the Portuguese had just before them. But they were particularly violent about it. So a couple of things they did was they enslaved, you know, all of the population. And then they also introduced the idea of beheading people if they were seen to be at all a threat, or someone who would, you know, try and sell nutmeg on their own, or just basically any male over the age of 15 was at risk of being beheaded. And what this did is that the original population of 15,000 people on the island was reduced to 600.
What? This sounds like the Salem witch trials of spices.
Yeah. Yeah, literally. Literally. And so anyone suspected of selling nutmeg outside of the company, or, you know, trying to get away with the seed, was beheaded immediately. And so the population, you know, more than halves. And the other thing that the Dutch did, which was quite sneaky, was they ordered that every single seed of nutmeg be rubbed with lime before it was put on a ship. Because if it was rubbed with lime, no one could copy the seed. No one could take an imprint of the seed because the lime would seal it.
Wow.
And this sort of meant that, you know, they controlled the nutmeg going off the island, the nutmeg coming off the boats or the ships into the warehouses in the Netherlands. But they were doing this at an incredible rate. Like, they were actually doing this at a rate faster than the world was consuming, despite how fast the world was starting to consume nutmeg. And so you have a spice that is really highly priced. You're making lots of it. You can't really flood the market with it because you don't want to take the spice of the price down. Or sorry, the price of the spice down. So what do? You artificially burn tons of spice. Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, so nutmeg has a pretty violent history, and it was definitely in the control of the Dutch for a long time. But there was that one island I said that they didn't have, which was Run Island, and it's one of the islands that sort of makes up the Banda Islands, and it wasn't under the rule of the Dutch at the time, but it was actually under the rule of the English. So the English tried during this period a few times to sort of come in and take over, but they only were able to have this one island of Run. And it was the English who controlled it. And for 60 odd years, there were a number of sort of skirmishes and truces between the two East India companies. And eventually they reached a compromise. And the compromise they reached was that the English agreed to swap the Run Island, which was one micro island on an already small scale of a small set of islands. But they agreed to swap it for a small trading post in the Americas. You may have heard of it. Manhattan?
Yep. That is insane. That's insane.
So if you think of that in like the terms of the cost of real estate today, a small, semi-inhabited island in Indonesia for the cost of the financial capital of the world, essentially.
So, it's funny, like, I really feel like you've coined the phrase spices are the quiet heroes of history. And this is just to allude again how powerful the impact of spices have had throughout the entire world. That's insane.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And so by the mid 17th century, the Dutch East India Company had 50,000 employees working on nutmeg alone. And do you want to guess what kind of profit they were offering their shareholders on an annual basis?
I bet you.
Dividend, sorry. Yeah.
It depends. So they could go really high or really low. I am going to assume they're going to go really high here.
Ballpark.
100?
Okay. Not quite so high. But they were offering annual dividends of 40% to their shareholders. Nuts. Which is crazy. Like, it's just, it's insanity, but it also makes very clear how we've been ingrained, this idea has been ingrained into us that, shareholders receiving high returns is like a really, really important part of our trading system, which persists till today. It's, it's how all companies operate. So it's really interesting to see that. But obviously, while this is happening, all of the other European powers are thinking, we got to get this out of their hands. Like, this is out of control. They're fleecing us and we need it and we want more of this, right? And the French and the British and the Belgians and the Italians and the Spanish and the Portuguese are, all sort of in different outposts in the world trying to find this. But the Dutch are the only ones who have control of nutmeg, which is until a gentleman by the name of Pierre Poivre, which is a hilarious name because poivre in French obviously means pepper. But he's known for his work in nutmeg. Monsieur Pierre, a French horticulturalist, smuggled out nutmeg seeds and took them to the French colony of Mauritius, which is where he first planted them. And then the British, and so now we start to make our way to South Asia, where then the British were able to get the seed, and then they planted massive nutmeg plantations in Penang, Singapore, India, Sri Lanka, the West Indies, and most notably Grenada. And so in Grenada today, nutmeg is the national symbol of the country, and it's, proudly sort of emblazoned on their flag. And it's called the black gold of Grenada because that was essentially how Grenada was seen to make their wealth. And then just a really, we can maybe go into like the British Empire a little bit, because when we come to Christmas and nutmeg, that's definitely a story to tell there. But just a really sort of interesting thing is how it continues to play a role in more modern politics, right? So right now we're still talking about centuries ago, but as late as the 1970s and 80s, Russia, when, you know, the US and Russia have always been in this kind of run for the world through a lot of the 20th century and dividing the world on sort of these ideological lines. And so Russia went into Grenada and bought out a quarter of all of their nutmeg supply. And what this meant is that the country of Grenada then went into the rest of the Eastern European bloc and tried to find more buyers so that they could compensate for all the Western buyers who were no longer buying from them because Russia was such a large client, which is until Ronald Reagan basically came in and the US ordered Grenada to stop selling their nutmeg to Russia, saying that the US would start buying more. And here's the reasoning, and I mean, you can sort of make of this what you will, but here's the quote. So he says, nutmeg goes with eggnog, eggnog goes with Christmas, and what the Russians are really after is Christmas.
Oh, man. That's crazy. That's just crazy. You know, it's funny. So when you kind of brought up the subject of nutmeg, I thought of, you know, there's two things that elicit a memory for nutmeg for me. And one of the stories I'll tell you now, it was this incredible opportunity for me to take some vacation time in Jamaica. And when I think of nutmeg, I think of jerk chicken, actually. And the reason I do is because the marinade is typically allspice berries, fresh thyme, scotch bonnets, green onion, ginger, soy. And sometimes they'll put cinnamon and nutmeg in it. And I find I got to sample so many beautiful jerk chickens there. My favorite always had this like beautiful punch of nutmeg in it. And when I started researching a little bit more about the history of jerk chicken, I started realizing that the method that in which they cook this over pimento wood, it kind of originated under colonial rule. The Spanish and the British in the 1600s would take groups of African slaves and bring them to Jamaica to work in the plantations in the mountains. And these escape, and then eventually some of the slaves would escape and they were referred to as Maroons. Well, these Maroons dug holes in the ground and they'd fill them with charcoal and bury meat in the holes. And then they would cover all of this so it didn't produce that much smoke up in the air and attract attention. And that's the history of jerk chicken and how it kind of started to get its authentic flavors and why it's still covered still to this day.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's awesome. I didn't realize the reason for the covering.
Yeah.
And it's super interesting.
It's got all that smoky flavor to it. And I always think of nutmeg with that because it's this beautiful flavor that when you have really an incredible jerk chicken, it's addictive. It's smoky and sweet and spicy. It's awesome.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's not an easy, it's not the easiest spice mix to replicate.
For sure.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So if we start to look kind of at the subcontinent, we actually see a couple of conflicting views. So let me ask you, actually. So when you think of subcontinental food, does nutmeg feature? And if it features for you, sort of where in that pantheon of subcontinental food does it feature?
So, you know, I take the, for me, it kind of elicits the memories of mace for the most part, rather than just nutmeg. You know, I think nutmeg, and I would think a little bit northern, to be honest, rather than some of the southern flavors that you get. And I also think of meat. So I'm ready to be corrected here.
No, I mean, there's no sort of hard and fast around it. And what's interesting is that it's used across the subcontinent, but it's not terribly popular anywhere. You know, it's not it's not a characteristic spice of any one region. But if you look at actually where nutmeg is used, it's used pretty much north to south, right? So Like you said, meat for sure. So actually in the South, mace, you mentioned mace goes into a lot of the biryani, and mace is the outer covering of the nutmeg seed. So if you just quickly Google nutmeg and mace, you will see this beautiful flower-like glove around the seed. And that flower-like glove is mace, which is separated from the seed and dried. And they have sort of similar flavors, but the seed is a lot more pungent because it contains all of the oil. So mace, absolutely, you know, biryani and meat dishes, especially in the South, very heavily used there. Certain garam masalas use nutmeg in them as well, though not all. And then the Mughals used quite a bit of nutmeg in their cooking because they had sort of milder flavors. Chili, when the Mughals were around, chili wasn't quite as popular in India, maybe in a small, some small pockets, but not, it wasn't yet, you know, the Portuguese hadn't yet brought sort of the more commercial chilies over that were available everywhere. And so nutmeg and some of these other spices played more significant roles in their food. And then actually in the Parsi cuisine, you have a really interesting occurrence of nutmeg where they mix nutmeg, cardamom, and vanilla, and that's sort of the base spice mix for a lot of their desserts. So that's something that we definitely should look more into and figure out sort of how that came to be a thing that it, you know, thing that it is. And was that influenced by what they ate in Iran, or was that something that developed on the subcontinent? That's a question that I haven't been able to answer yet. But that's a really interesting use. And the reason it's particularly interesting is because it's one of the only instances on the subcontinent where we see nutmeg used in a dessert or in a sweet capacity. Whereas in the rest of the, or at least in the Western world, nutmeg is a very common dessert, you know, features very commonly in desserts.
Yeah, you know, we kind of look at it in the West as one of the warming flavors. You know, you have nutmeg, you have cinnamon, you have clove. Those are the traditional things that you start to see in the fall and winter time that are very predominant. And you don't see the application used as much from a savory side. So it's very polar opposite in how we kind of, you know, use it.
Yeah, and actually, interestingly, you see a similar sort of split with cinnamon as well. So cinnamon also in South Asia, much more rare in dessert, much more common in savory foods, and almost the opposite in the Western world.
Yeah. It's really cool to kind of see the differences, because when I started studying food from the subcontinent, I realized how much cinnamon is used from a savory aspect, especially when it comes to meat. And I think my exposure to savory cinnamon in the West was mostly through a lot of Mexican cuisine, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, again, a really interesting use of cinnamon in the Mexican cuisine, where it's used as something that's very warm and also something that can be quite rich with cacao and chili and so on. So very, very different applications everywhere. Yeah.
It's delicious.
That it is. So we see then, you know, the British planting nutmeg all over, and then you start to have the proliferation of nutmeg in the empire. And obviously spices were something that were becoming more and more important. And by the mid-19th century, the use of spices in curries and pickles and chutneys had become, you know, very widespread amongst the middle classes. And it had become so widespread that manufacturers were producing cheap containers as opposed to the sort of prior to that, people would have had very fancy containers for spices because they were so valuable. And so they would have had small boxes in which they kept their whole spices only to be used, you know, as needed. But that starts to change as the supply and demand of spices changes in the sort of 18th and 19th centuries. And you see it actually in a lot of the cookbooks. So you see an 1852 cookbook from the UK where they talk about few dinners being complete unless there's a curry at the table. And one of the key spices in that, you know, is amongst many others is nutmeg. And so it was really like we talk about how spices became so important as the precursor to the global spice trade system we have today. And one of the ways was the wives of essentially Indian colonialists, who played a super crucial role in popularizing spices, because they would either return home with gifts of spices, and or they would send spices back. They would write recipe books that, you know, encourage the sale of spices in Britain and then later on in the United States as well, and then in Australia, so on and so forth. And they would bring back recipes and sort of anglicized forms of Indian cuisine, which they would then publicize in cookbooks and journals and magazines and so on. And over time, this starts to become common parlance. And so that's how we see it coming into the cuisine at large in this period of time. But it's obviously been around for a long time. And so the association with Christmas for nutmeg actually goes way, way back. But before we go back, I actually want to just read out one quote from Lizzie Collingham. So if you haven't read Lizzie Collingham yet and you're listening to our podcast, I would highly, highly suggest that you go ahead and like read some of her books, because if you're interested in the movement of spices and other foodstuffs around the British Empire and kind of how it changed the way that we live and how it interacted with some of the other empires, she is just an incredible, incredible historian for that.
I think it's a must read at this point. Can we just add that to the must read list?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll link it in the show notes for this episode, but we'll put a link to a couple of her books that particularly speak to this. And she reminds us in one of her beautiful accounts of Britain's gastronomic influence on the world, and they had sort of a reverse gastronomic influence. It wasn't so much that they went out into the world and, you know, taught people how to cook. It was more that they went out in the world. They took what they could find from the world and created something that was then theirs. And that was the sort of influence they had. So the influence they had was really a trade influence as they brought things back to England. And so in talking about Christmas recipes, often it was said that the Christmas pudding was used as an example of a geography lesson for children, because the currants that they put in came from Australia, the raisins came from South Africa, the suet came from New Zealand, the Demerara sugar came in from Barbados, the eggs from chicken in the Irish Free State, the cinnamon from Ceylon, the cloves from Zanzibar, the nutmeg from the Malayan Straits, Cypriot brandy, Jamaican rum, and really only the breadcrumbs, the flour, and the porter came from home, from England.
Oh, I've heard that so many times, and every time it still hits that like deep guttural feeling.
Yeah, and that's sort of why, this is sort of why these things have now become traditional, but that tradition very much started at a certain point in time. But what's interesting is that that's not really the first instance of these spices being used at Christmas. That story is actually way, way, way older. So Christmas being sort of characterized by this bouquet of spices was really a result of the Crusades.
Really?
Yeah. So Rebecca Fraser writes, she says that she sort of talks about this, where she tells us that from 1095 onwards, the successive attempts to liberate the Holy Lands from the Turks essentially brought the Norman Crusaders in contact with the cuisine of the Arabian Middle East. And so amongst the influences that they came in contact with were spices like pepper and nutmeg and cinnamon. And so what they did is they started doing was creating these mincemeat pies with dry fruits that they had access to because of where they were in the Arabian Middle East. And so dry fruits, shredded meat mixed in a sauce of alcohol and these spices to preserve them. And so essentially, this was obviously essential because it was a time before refrigeration, but this is also why a mince pie is called, you know, why what goes into a mince pie is called mincemeat, is because it used to be dry fruits and meat mixed together. And then that sort of evolves over time to become something that's associated with Christmas. It's evolved over time. That's something that becomes to be associated with winter. And then eventually sort of today in every supermarket, at least in the UK, you see mince pies for a few months.
Oh man, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. You think all the way back to like Henry II, and they were sending, you know, 60 pounds of pepper, 60 pounds of cinnamon, and 60 pounds of nutmeg just for their Christmas feast. So, quantities are crazy.
And it's clear how that influenced the cuisine of it. It's crazy. And you know, as we get to my second story today, I'll tell you kind of how there's a little kind of scarlet thread with that as well.
Okay. Do you want to jump straight into that?
I'm here for it. What do you think? Is this the moment? I'm rolling up my sleeves.
Yeah, go for it. I think the only thing I'll add is that one thing that's changed is that historically when you ate spices like this, you basically showed that you had money, right? Because you had the financial indulgence until it became really common. And I've already said that nutmeg was like hugely, hugely valuable. And so it was kind of like having a bar of gold with you if you had a couple of seeds of nutmeg with you, you know? What's interesting, and then this will hopefully somewhat lead a little bit into your story, is the spread of the Christmas spices to the Americas. So this idea of clove, nutmeg, cinnamon, you know, being this Christmas sort of holy trio, no pun intended. The spread of these spices to America was a little bit rough because the Puritans tried to sort of, you know, quash this idea of celebration, and it was actually, Christmas celebrations were actually outlawed in the Massachusetts Bay Colony for a while, and because they had to, you know, trade exclusively with Britain, etc. Like it wasn't quite the joyous celebration that we know today. But over time, as the Dutch and the British and the German immigrants would come in, you know, they would bring the celebrations with them, and then obviously today Christmas is much celebrated.
Yeah,
story time.
That's so cool. This is why we started the podcast, because we just needed an escape to nerd out together.
Pretty much.
So growing up for me, Christmas, you know, we didn't have a lot of routines and a lot of kind of traditions in our household, except we would go to my grandmother's. My grandmother lived with our aunt, and we would all kind of celebrate Christmas together. And my grandmother would make two things, one of which was very confusing because it made no sense for Christmas, and that was a lemon meringue pie. We don't understand why. Made no sense. Lemons in New England aren't a thing, and very much in winter. I guess you get winter citrus. So, you know, that was a stretch. But the second thing she would make is, we're French, so she would make this thing called gâton. And gâton is this pork kind of pâté. And it's typically something that you see in a lot of French Canadian communities. Are you familiar with it?
I just learned. I think you had you made it for Thanksgiving too, right?
Yeah, I make it for all Thanksgiving and Christmas.
So I learned of it from you just recently.
Yeah, so gâton is basically it's traditionally made with ground pork, and you would take that with onion, a good amount of clove, and then I always did a pinch of nutmeg into that, and you would really bring it to kind of this simmer and let it cook with water for hours and hours. It's like a 7-hour process where you're just topping it off with water, just enough to cover the meat. And eventually you keep smashing it with a potato masher, and it becomes this like very silky kind of pate that tastes of pork fat and clove and a pinch of nutmeg. And, you know, when I started getting into the culinary arts, I thought of, you know, some of our friends would be like, hey, you know, what are some traditions? And people would always say, oh, these were our traditions. And I didn't really have, you know, I didn't have one that I really enjoyed. And gâton ended up being the one for me. And so I've been able to recreate that recipe and almost do like, the way that I do it now is I do a pork confit where I take, you know, pork butt and I slowly like roast it. Then I let it simmer down very, very slow in its own fat and do it that way. Then I emulsify it in a Vitamix and I fat cap it off. And so it's got that traditional pate feel to it. But that nutmeg is always the punch of flavor that you really need in gâton. And it always reminds me, like, it instantaneously brings me back to those moments.
That's awesome. As you were describing that, I was actually like, oh, I really want some of this right now.
The cool thing that we get to do is, so traditionally, like, my mom would always spread a little bit of mustard on toast and put the gratin on that. And since I went on that.
That sounds so good.
And it's so good because you have the acidity, right? Yeah. But now I do it with kasundi.
And I think nice.
And it works so well because I'm a nerd and I love Bengali food.
That's awesome. And you can definitely see the similarities between something like that and like the mince pie, you know, like it's that same kind of idea of like cooking the meat with spices and yeah, let's look into gratin and, you know, if it was something that was done to preserve the meat and was that it, or was it for the flavor, or, you know, what was it? But that's such an awesome tradition. And I mean, you know, of course you do things with it that sound just absolutely, absolutely delicious, because definitely when you say, you know, you cook the pork butt down really, really slowly, that sounds way nicer than, you know, I boil meat for 7 hours.
You learn a couple tricks in the kitchen.
No, so that's awesome.
Well, what about you? Do you have any like traditional kind of holiday things that remind you of that using nutmeg?
So the thing that I love the most, which isn't necessarily, you know, people might get up in arms and be like, well, how is this traditional to you? Well, it's just traditional to me because I really love it and I've done it for years now. But the thing that I love the most around the holiday time, especially with nutmeg, is eggnog. I could drink.
Yes.
I could drink a liter of eggnog, like, no problem. No problem.
So. Yes. There's nothing like eggnog at Christmas when it's snowing. It's just like this euphoric kind of moment. And the best part is, this is something that I know you can relate to.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, eggnog is just delicious. And it's essentially a mixture of eggs and cream and sugar and typically some sort of alcohol. Either rum is quite often is the one used. Interestingly, when eggnog was first started making eggnog, they made it with ale rather than with rum. And I suppose it was the most, because it was the most like easily available alcohol. And they only started using rum when it came over to the United States and they had the sugar plantation so close by. And so rum was in in abundance essentially. And so that's when eggnog started, that's when they started to have rum in eggnog instead of anything else.
That's crazy. I can see that working though.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the basic formula, whether there's places all over the world that have it. So, like, Poland has a variety of eggnog. In Germany, they have a variety. In Mexico, they have a variety, which was kind of influenced by the Americas. It wasn't something that predated that necessarily. And the basic formula is kind of the same. It's kind of, you know, eggs beaten with sugar, milk, and cream, and then one of the spirits. And so, in Peru, interestingly, they make it with pisco, which is something I now really want to try. That sounds awesome. But yeah, so eggnog for me, and then always a little bit of nutmeg sprinkled on the top. And nutmeg is really the predominant spice for me in eggnog. It's essentially just cinnamon and nutmeg. And for me, nutmeg is sort of a, you know, 70-30 to cinnamon.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. That sounds delicious.
Yeah. And then this is probably the first episode where we haven't really focused a ton on the subcontinent.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel like this is a wholesome episode. We're just kind of regaling our tales of how terrible the history of nutmeg is, but also how warming the seasons are. That was really lame.
Keith now works for Hallmark. You can find him at here.
This whole chef thing's not working out too good.
So let's round out with a sort of nod to what is happening on the subcontinent. We talked a little bit about the various cuisines that it comes into. It's obviously a massive export spice. But what's interesting is that India specifically, so all the other countries in South Asia, well, Pakistan and Bangladesh, namely, Sri Lanka grows some nutmeg as well. Pakistan and Bangladesh import almost all of the nutmeg they need. Interestingly, in India, a lot of it is exported, but nutmeg is also imported, which is really interesting because we don't typically use a ton, but but most of the nutmeg that is used is still imported, and then some amount is also exported. So we're using more than we're able to produce, which is interesting if you think about, you know, across the length and breadth of the country, what that must mean. And it's because, unlike other spices, which typically are grown in various parts of the country, and then you have, you know, various varieties of them, nutmeg is essentially grown in Kerala and Tamil Nadu, and then and specifically in the Angamali Kaladi belt of Kerala, and then a little bit in Maharashtra, but like really, really a little bit in Maharashtra. And so that's where you see like the most dominant production of nutmeg. It's called Jaipal in Hindi. And what's interesting again is that Katie Achaya, who we talk about a lot on this podcast, in his recounting of Indian ingredients, he notes that Jaipal was mentioned as far back as the Manusmriti, which is obviously at odds with what I've been talking about in terms of the British bringing it to India from Indonesia. And so one of the things that I'm trying to figure out, and as soon as I find it, it'll be up on my Instagram. One of the things that I'm trying to figure out is, was that a different variety? And then, you know, the name was attributed also to what we know as nutmeg today, because it was the closest to what was already known, which we see happening with chilies, for example, right? Like most chilies in South Asian languages have the word for pepper in them, because that was the feeling that it gave people when they ate it. So that word mirch, kali mirch, lal mirch, hari mirch, it comes from the word for pepper, right? So I'm wondering if it's the same thing.
Yeah, that's actually amazing. I'd love to learn that too. And it's funny to extrapolate that on just one quick second. For those of you who don't know, Ragini does an amazing course called Food and Politics. Here's my plug for you. She did not put me up to this. And in Food and Politics, you kind of touch on the same thing. I learned a lot of that with our discussion on jeera and the different varieties of jeera as well. Is there that similarity as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that I think I need to look more into, because the mention of it is the time that it's mentioned, it's just one particular mention that they kind of talk about time and again. And so I'm not convinced that it was, you know, I'm not convinced that it was something that grew widely, but I could be wrong. And then we see that by the time the Mughals come in, they're importing nutmeg and they're using quite a bit of it. But they're still importing it into the country. So, you know, where's that coming from? So some answers still there to find.
Always. And that's the best part of
always.
It.
Always.
Awesome.
For sure. Cool. Well, this has been fun.
That's so good. Yeah, we, you know, I feel like, I hope everyone listening today walked away with at least two cool facts. There's one about Manhattan that if you don't walk away with that one, you just didn't listen to the podcast. So go ahead and re-listen to it, because that's good for us too. Ragini, thank you. Your research is always impeccable. You are wonderful, and it's always amazing learning from you. So thank you for all you do.
Thank you so much, and right back at you, and have a happy holidays.
And we will be back in 2022. I'm so excited.
We sure will. Take care, guys, and have a safe holiday season.